Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS going to do a miniature virtual think tank here. We have Speaker Tim Jones and former Senator Jeff Smith. If you have questions, why don't you tweet them to Tony or Rach if you would like to ask the gentleman something specific or just bring up a topic. Tim, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
And Jeff, whether it's 2 days in a row or twice in a week, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Dave.
So we have not even mentioned the election because we've been talking about stupid stuff. So let's just talk about last night. Tim, I'll throw it to you. Talk about what were some of the most interesting or surprising outcomes.
Well, I think this caught me off guard, although Jeff may or may not have a different opinion. He voted for the winner in this, and it was the big upset, I guess it was, of Cori Bush taking out longtime Congressman Lacey Clay. And not just Lacey, but the Clay family, Lacey and his father, served collectively in Congress for over 50 years. I mean, they're an institution. They were also known. I mean, look, Lacey Clay is I would call him a liberal, St. Louis City based Democrat. But apparently, in this day and age, he was too conservative for the new movement that I believe has taken over the Democratic Party on the far left. And Cori Bush upended him. Now, look, I think St. Louis suffers though. St. Louis is already suffering. But I think they suffer more because even if you want to call Lacey Clay an establishment guy who stayed in Congress too long, he was known for working across the aisle with the Missourians that are very Republican. And statewide, Missouri has become a red state, right? We have two Republican U.S. senators. Six of our eight congressmen are Republicans. So you got to have a good working relationship with that much of a supermajority representing you in D.C., and whether it's bringing the NGA project here to the city of St. Louis, something the city desperately needs, some form of economic development besides, it'd be nice to see economic development stats other than crime and homicide stats every day. I think it's a big loss for the region, but, you know, maybe she'll surprise me and Ms. Bush will be just fine.
Okay. What do you think, Jeff?
So let me first say, you know, I met you, Dave, like 16 years ago when I was doing something very similar to what Cori Bush, I was trying to do something very similar to what she just did, which was take on like a dynasty, right? I tried to take on the Carnahan. She went against the Clays and she got over the top. And so first, you just got to give a ton of respect to somebody who will go up against, you know, one of the leading dynasties in Missouri politics and not back down and beat them. So credit where credit's due. Let me talk a little bit about the dynamics, though. You know, I think people who are just attributing this to ideology are maybe taking it a little too far or giving a little too much significance to that. I think part of it is not about ideology, but about presence. You know, Cori Bush has been on the ground since Ferguson, involved in the protests, on the street, with a bullhorn, giving speech after speech and getting to know people. And, you know, Congressman Clay just has not been in the district very much. You know, he's been very, you know, he's got a house in Maryland and he stayed, you know, he was actually born and raised there when his dad was a congressman. And so he just hasn't been on the ground that much. I think that stark difference between the two as outsider on the ground versus insider on Capitol Hill was magnified by this year's protests, because all the activism, the renewed activism that took place in the wake of the George Floyd death I think, really helped boost her campaign and reminded people that, you know, they want someone who's more kind of a dynamic voice in the way that she is. So I think it's more than just ideology.
This is a big election, not just for St. Louis and Missouri, but nationally. I'm looking at Drudge. It's one of the top stories. What does this tell the you two gentlemen, if anything, about November 3rd coming up for the big national election?
Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So I don't know, Dave, it's so hard to take. And look, I would say this the same way if we were talking about a deep red district, you know. So Lacey Clay's district, let's be honest, is a deep blue district. I think there's a Republican running there in the fall, but, you know, they're not going to win. They don't have a snowball's chance in heck, right? So it remains a deep blue district. So I don't know if you can draw a lot of aspects from that. I think both parties have gone through transitions over the last few years, right? The Republican Party has become the party of Trump, and it hasn't become a more the party of Trump is to Jeff's point, not a party necessarily about ideology. No one's going to accuse Donald Trump of being a hardcore William F. Buckley style fire-breathing conservative. He does like to get things done. Now, the problem a lot of people say they have with Trump is his bombastic attitude. They don't like the tweeting. They don't like the personality. But if you look at the record, Donald Trump truly has gotten more done with more animosity and opposition directed towards him than many of the previous presidents on both sides of the aisle. And some of the things he's done has been bipartisan, right? The right to try legislation, the criminal justice reform, you know, things like that. So I don't know that we can take a lot from a district like Lacey Clay's district that becomes bluer or more invested in that form of philosophy. So I do think it shows the hyperpolarization, not only of the parties, but where they reside, right? You look at the map of Missouri, and it very much emulates the map of the United States, right? The deep urban areas in our state, just like the deep urban areas in our country, seem to get more and more blue with each passing election. The rural areas tend to be more red. So this will be an election about getting your base out, but also appealing to that very narrow slice in the middle on some form of bipartisan issue that appeals to that great middle that both parties are going to be desperately fighting for as we head into November.
Jeff, any thoughts on the general election and what this means to it, if anything?
I mean, I think Tim's exactly right when it comes to the increased polarization of the country. You've seen this phenomenon that one author calls it the big sort, whereby Democrats are moving to more Democratic areas. Republicans are moving to more Republican areas. People are sorting themselves more by their kind of culture and ideology and politics than they ever have in this country. I think it's actually a pretty troubling trend because I think we do better as a country when we're talking across, you know, a lot of these lines that tend to divide us. So it's a concern, you know, and I think Democrats who look at the Amendment 2 map last night, which I'm thrilled that Amendment 2 passed. I think, you know, it's a good thing that I think it's going to help some rural hospitals stay open. And there's 37 other states that have done it. None of them have seen a huge budget problem that some of the detractors have feared. But I don't think Democrats in Missouri should count on overwhelming margins in 5 or 6 counties, or really just in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and Jackson County, small margins in, you know, Boone County, Columbia, St. Charles, and a couple others to win statewide elections. That doesn't leave much of a margin for error. We can't, you know, as a state Democratic Party, we can't just think it's okay to get 28% in the boot heel or in southern Missouri or northern Missouri. So we need to be connecting more. We need to get candidates really trying to mobilize people. And this is a good year to do so because, of course, President Trump is as polarizing as he is.
Hey, guys, it's Tony Colombo. Obviously, one of the elections everybody was watching yesterday nationally, I think, was the Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner race. A lot of people thought it was, you know, going to be close. Some people thought there was a chance that Kimberly Gardner might lose that race, and in fact, she won it quite handily. Jeff, you can go first. Just what are your thoughts on that that race in particular, and what message does it send?
It's a great question, Tony. I think from a very cold-eyed political perspective, I think some Republicans got exactly what they wanted yesterday. We saw Republicans over the last 4 or 5 weeks, especially after the McCloskey, you know, the couple in the Central West End that, you know, descended, you know, walked out with waving their guns at the protesters. You saw everyone from Trump down to Parson and Schmidt and other prominent Republicans going, you know, kind of going after Kim Gardner and taking up for the McCloskeys, whose behavior I think was ridiculous, and I think a lot of people agree. But what I think they did, and I don't know if it was inadvertent or not, was they caused a lot of city Democrats to get Kim Gardner's back and to say, well, if she did something that angered all those people in, you know, charging the McCloskeys, then she must be doing something right. And that allowed Gardner to distract people from a lot of serious questions about how her office is running, what the clearance rate is on, you know, murders, how many people she's successfully prosecuting. It took away from some of those questions. It moved the debate to a terrain that was better for her for this primary electorate. So if Republicans really wanted a change in the prosecuting attorney's office, it wasn't the right thing to do to be calling her out on that. If they wanted to keep her there as a political foil who they could use, you know, in rhetorically to make themselves look better on crime issues or to raise money, then I guess it was a smart maneuver.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really admire Jeff's mental gymnastics on that, of blaming the Republicans for Kim Gardner in a city that's 85%, you know, left-wing Democrat. But hey, let's look at this. It's a disaster. And I didn't wish that at all. As a Republican, as someone who's spent most of his life in or around the city of St. Louis, I'm sad today, because I'm sad for the city. We have a city where the mayor is an empty suit, one of the worst leaders we've ever had, and the prosecutor doesn't know how to prosecute crime. And this has nothing to do with Republicans. Most Republicans left the city decades ago. The city's gone from 800,000 population in the 50s to barely 300,000 now. The education system down there is in a shambles. Economic development is gone. I mean, you all down there in the studio, you drive in there every day. It's become a post-apocalyptic dystopia. It's one of the most dangerous cities in the country right now. On average, there's more people dying of murder in the city of St. Louis than COVID-19. It's traumatic. And when you have Democrats willing to step up, like many of them did, like Mary Pat Carl as the potential opposition there, and say, as Democrats, this Democrat Kim Gardner has gone too far. She's a failure. When you've got the Post-Dispatch agreeing with Tim Jones about the target, then you probably better believe there's a problem with the target and not the Post or Tim Jones. And I've roundly condemned her for years. The Post finally caught up to me, and I think they wrote, I don't know, 10 editorials slamming Kim Gardner, one failure, epic failure after another. I mean, she has no relationship with the police. The homicide rate is skyrocketing. She has a 20% conviction rate. As a former prosecutor, I can tell you that's beyond abysmal. I just really think Democrats missed a chance to do something to bring some form of sanity back to the city. I don't know what happens now. I really feel terrible for the city of St. Louis today.
Okay, let's change it up. We're talking to Speaker Tim Jones and Jeff Smith. I think I know how this one's going to go, but we'll do it anyway. COVID in general, you've been doing this now for 4 months, something like that. Jeff, let me start with you. How do you think the federal response to COVID has been?
Abysmal. I mean, and I think it's the kind of situation where if you have an exam and, you know, you're a student, and they say, well, these questions are weighted. You know, the first two questions are weighted more heavily than all the rest of the questions on the test. Then I think that's a little bit analogous to what we're experiencing here. There were some big decisions that the federal government had to make in its response in February, in March, and it didn't make them, or it made them incorrectly. For months on end, President Trump was mocking the concept of wearing a mask, mocking Joe Biden for wearing one. Only, you know, 4 months later, he's come around to saying, hey, everybody, you know, should probably wear a mask. And Republican governors can finally fall in line and do what they know was probably right in the first place, what the scientific consensus agreed was probably right, to have everybody in public wearing a mask. So I think, you know, there have been massive mistakes on testing, you know, there have been rhetorical mistakes by President Trump in his press conferences talking about, you know, injecting bleach, you know, into people's bodies and just a whole litany of mistakes. The fact of the matter is, if we'd have had a president who led, who listened to the scientists on day one, who didn't undermine his own scientists like Fauci and like Dr. Birx, which is what he's been doing this last week, and we had a coherent federal response, I think we'd be in a much, much better place.
Tim?
Yeah, so we can blame all the politicians we want, and I'll be very happy to blame Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo for not taking this thing seriously either. I don't think the problem was necessarily Donald Trump. I think the problem was expecting the government to solve all these issues, and that's where we absolutely went wrong. I think Fauci is an extreme failure. The guy says one thing one day and another thing the next. There's a lot of questions about him and his connections to Bill Gates and Moderna and all these other issues that aren't necessarily conspiracy theories, but they are proven by fact. Look, I think lockdowns were an epic failure. I wish President Trump had not taken the advice of the government eggheads and done them. And I'll use as my example Sweden. Everybody laughed at Sweden and said Sweden was doing it wrong. If you pull up the chart today on the WHO's website, you will see a statement by the WHO, the World Health Organization, stating that Sweden probably had this right all along. They took it seriously. They did social distancing. They had different guidelines in place. But you know what they didn't do? They did some things that we did based on the advice of the government. They didn't lock down their economy. They don't have any forced mandates. They've gotten their kids back to school. Because if you want to talk about data and science, the data and science is clear. And I saw a pediatrician panel on MSNBC where every single pediatrician on MSNBC said we should absolutely send our kids back to school. We're doing them more harm than good by not. But it seems like the far left is taking advantage of this because they know it's the only thing that they have to beat Donald Trump over the head with every single day. I really think that if we had taken a tact where we had addressed maybe more herd immunity, we'd be better off. Sweden did have a quick climb up, but then they had a precipitous drop down, and they have one of the lowest death rates in the world, which, by the way, the United States is not too far behind. When you compare the U.S. to the other Western European nations, our death rate, which is ultimately the only thing that matters, not cases, but whether people die or not, it's approaching 0.04%, which, in all things being equal, is around a strong influenza outbreak year. So I just think the whole thing has been mishandled, and a lot of it's to blame on the government bureaucracy that we have set up.
So we have the number I'm seeing is 13% are uncommitted in the presidential election. I think that sounds kind of high, but let's assume that it's that. Jeff, I honestly thought that Trump would win in a landslide. Now I'm thinking it's about 50-50. How does Trump bring it back, and how does your guy Biden pull in that 13% with only like 90 days left?
So Biden doesn't need to pull in all of that 13%. Biden has been ahead in the Real Clear Politics average, which is probably the best way to look at polling data, because it's very easy for somebody who's trying to sway you to say, well, there's a poll today that says this or that. So the best way is to look at an average of all the polls. And the average of all the polls has Biden up nationally by almost 8 percentage points right now. And in almost every key swing state, Biden being up. So what does Biden need to do? Biden needs to do the same thing that he's been doing, which is, you know, not make a lot of mistakes and let the focus be on Donald Trump. Donald Trump is desperate to take the, you know, he can't stand anyone else being in the spotlight, which is why the minute, you know, someone else, Fauci, goes to throw a baseball out at a game, he has to say to the Yankees, hey, I want to come and throw a baseball out, you know, at the start of the game, because he's got this pathological need to be in the spotlight. But the irony is, it hurts him politically the more he's in the spotlight. He needs to get the election more on the stuff that Tim was talking about before. If the focus of the election is on statues coming down in cities and crime going up in cities, that will benefit Trump. As long as Biden keeps the focus on the president's dreadful mismanagement of the pandemic, which overwhelming majorities of Americans agree, over 60% of Americans agree that he has mismanaged this, then I think Biden will win the election. So, you know, he needs to make a solid vice presidential pick. I hope he picks Al Demings from Florida. I think would be a a really solid pick. I hope he goes in that direction. We'll see. But if he keeps doing what he's doing, I think he's going to be fine.
Tim, I'll give you last word.
Yeah, so I think it's great that Jeff thinks that Joe Biden should continue to stay in his basement. You know, I think that's just wonderful to run a national campaign. Look, Hillary Clinton may have been the most disliked candidate ever to run in American history for president. Joe Biden's probably going to be the most boring. And folks, it's amazing. I think right now the polling you're seeing, and you've seen that gap narrow. I was surprised to hear Jeff say it's only down to 8 points nationally. Let's remember the Electoral College, which is something the Democrats want to abolish. That's the only thing that matters. And I think you've seen a narrowing in those states as well. So Donald Trump right now, I will agree with Jeff on this. He's running against himself because Joe Biden is in his basement. He's basically the generic Democrat. He's the opposite. He is the choice to the 99% anti-negative the negative media onslaught every single day telling everybody what a horrible person Donald Trump continues to be. So once Biden comes out and they have these debates and he can't put three sentences together, because I've seen in all the friendly interviews he can't, he's not going to do it on a debate stage, people are then going to have a binary choice. I think Jeff's point on the VP pick is very interesting. I think that would be a wise pick, which is why I don't think they'll do it. I've heard from folks you know, in the D.C. circles claim it's going to be Kamala Harris or Susan Rice. I think either one of those would be devastating for Biden. But we'll see. You know, again, we're playing for that small sliver in the middle, Dave, where it's 13% or probably lower, as you point out. That's what we're going to be heading into the November election looking for. You see the economy, though, coming back. It's come back in many different ways. And once we get the handcuffs off the states to fully open their economies, I think Donald Trump is going to cruise to victory, even though a narrow one it might be.
Thank you, boys. Appreciate it.
Good to talk to you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
534 DGS. Happy Wednesday. So every day the guys give me ideas for show prep. Sue, I loved yours. What was yours?
I only had one.
Yeah, I noticed that. I can't find it. It was something like cookies are good.
No, it was about SpaceX.
Was it?
Yeah, because they launched some sort of prototype that they hope will be the next one they do to Mars. And it worked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they did it in Texas.
Yeah, Elon is pretty focused on Mars right now.
Yeah, and I kind of love it when he, you know, becomes obsessed with stuff, because if we can get to Mars, that'd be just so great.
Rach, you talked about watching TikTok videos about Hollywood pedophiles.
There's supposedly a ring of them. Epstein,
is this
the whole
like
thing.
The Corey Haim thing?
I only saw a couple videos last night of this woman who worked for a real estate company. I guess it might have been like Airbnb, and these Hollywood people were renting out their mansion to people, and someone went to stay, and they ended up leaving after a day because they were so freaked out by everything in their mansion, and it was like paintings of like really emaciated looking women that were like super creepy, and then like just a lot of overtly sexual stuff, and then like ropes and weird chairs and stuff in the garage, and it creeped me out. And they started talking about all of these different things, like music videos that people have made, like Justin Bieber's music video for Yummy is all I don't listen to him. I mean, I know some of his songs. I've seen the video. It didn't strike me as weird, but apparently when the single came out, he posted all these photos to Instagram of like little kids and was like hashtag yummy. Isn't that strange?
Ew.
Like, I hope
Justin
this is...
Justin Timberlake did this?
Justin Bieber.
Oh.
And they cited a couple more examples. I mean, I'm not trying to go down the conspiracy theory hole that much, but it really creeped me out as I was watching it. You just hope that stuff isn't real and it's not true. But it's the kind of thing where I fear that if you looked into it, it would really, really freak you out.
TikTok definitely has a pedophile problem.
Holy cow.
Yeah, for sure.
That's been one of their criticisms for a while.
What do you mean by that?
Just because of the nature of TikTok and it being appealing to such a young audience, and the thing that made it popular was young girls dancing or lip syncing along with current pop songs, and just it being so easy for creepy people to spot, to watch those videos.
See, I'm not even sure
share them with their
creepy
friends.
You can call that a pedophile problem. Like, who do you do you think you're attracting?
Yeah, but then they're also able to communicate with the kids and make videos with interact with them and stuff. So it kind of goes back to that whole, we were talking about TikTok earlier and Trump wanting to ban it. And there's no doubt that if we started banning apps like TikTok or so many different apps and websites that steal data or, don't have enough restrictions to keep people out. There's no doubt that we would save some people's data. We would probably be able to, limit access from pedophiles and other criminals, and their access to kids or adults and data or spying and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of people would say that's the price of freedom. Like, that's, what I mean? Like, I'd rather live in a country where I can do all this than have it all restricted by the government. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? What do you think about banning apps, banning TikTok, putting restrictions on things like that?
Let's assume for the moment that China's not involved. Mm-hmm. They are. But let's just take that out of it. Mm-hmm. It's just the weird, creepy factor.
Yeah. It's criminals.
It's sick, but to me it's just a giant macrocosm of, like, summer camp teachers who go there because they're pedophiles, or people who go to your Facebook to look at pictures of your kids at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sickos are always going to find something like that. It's just that this is like the Super Bowl for them.
Right.
Because it, as I understand it, I've never been on TikTok. People have sent me a couple things and okay, but I've never actually navigated it. But as I understand it, it was built on 14-year-old girls dancing.
Yeah.
And so, like I said,
I think that's right.
Like, okay, that's, what do you think you're going to get?
Right.
True.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems like a parenting issue more than anything else. If you don't want pervs to see your minor daughter dancing like she's Britney Spears, don't let her post that, especially
let
not in a bikini.
Let parents parent, not the government parent.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I fall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the government is not responsible for you making sure that your son or daughter does
to
not
To what
do
degree
that.
Do you guys judge parents who openly let their young teen girls dance provocatively for the world on TikTok?
Harshly. And I know it's popular to be like, teens should be able to express their sexuality. Yeah, with each other, whatever. I'm not going to get involved in that. But it's inappropriate. They don't understand what they're doing. And even if they're trying to be hot and sexy and they think they want that attention, they do not understand what they're doing. They don't understand what they're messing with. So I judge that very harshly.
Agreed. That's why 18-year-old people under 18 can't sign contracts, because they don't have the brain chemistry to be able to make a good decision. Phoebe is a very mature 15-year-old in many, many ways, but she's still 15 years old. And that's, I agree. That's why you have parents to do things like that, so that you can scream "I hate you" and slam the door. But maybe it saves you from something even worse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because it also determines your interpretation of provocatively. Mm-hmm. Like I see some of these videos and I think they're way over the line as far as the way the kids are dressed, and I agree completely with Rachel. But somebody else may see, but I may see a video that it's some kid lip syncing and they're not dressed, you know, all scantily, and they're not dancing, but maybe they are swaying their hips or something, and another person would go, "Oh, that's..." So it just kind of depends on what your definition of provocatively is. But for me, yeah, I agree. I judge them harshly. I'm sorry, Sue. Go ahead.
I was going to say, plus anything you do on the internet, even if it does disappear, doesn't really. Somebody could have taken a screenshot. Stuff like that does not go away, and it can always come back mm-hmm. when you don't want it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever I was 15, the worst you could do was like, "Oh, yeah, she's wearing a skirt that's too short. This is, maybe mom needs to sit down and have a talk with her." Now there's photographic and video evidence of every decision these kids make. They splash everything online. And you know what's really annoying and really lame is when you see because they're children, so when you see a child engage in something they don't understand and you say, maybe that's inappropriate, it's really annoying when other adults go, "What is wrong with you? They're just having fun. How could you sexualize them? Come on." When they look like an adult woman and they're behaving like an adult woman, it's not crazy for an adult's mind to go like, "This is wrong. This should be behind closed doors." It's one thing if girls want to get together and pretend they're shooting a music video and have fun, but whenever you put it on the internet, I'm not some sort of pervert, prude, woman hater, slut shamer for being like, "I don't think you guys understand what's going on here." But that's part of culture now. And that's a way to shut someone down and be like, "How could you sexualize their actions? Kids should be allowed to have fun." I agree, they should, but they don't need to be having fun on this public of a stage whenever it's content like that. It's just so much more important to protect mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. than it is to make some sort of grander point about femininity, sexuality, sexualizing.
Are there rules?
Truth.
There are rules on TikTok. You can get banned for very stupid things, but they do not take down videos like that.
Yeah, and Rach, you're so right. And it's not me, and it's not Rachel, and it's not the parents that are sexualizing these kids. We're protecting them
right.
from the people that are doing that. There was such a big thing exposed on YouTube a couple years ago. These communities of predators that would go to like kid channels on YouTube, like kids opening like toy reveal, you know, channels, and screenshotting or time stamping like a part of the video where a kid's like belly is showing or something, and then they would put it in these communities and send the video around with the time stamps where they are the ones that are sexualizing these kids. So yeah, you can say, "Well, oh, let the kids have fun and stop sexualizing them." No, we're protecting them from the people that are doing
that.
Yeah,
it's like if your young daughter were in the front yard dancing in her bra and panties and there were men across the street watching, you'd call the cops.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
But
yes.
If there are 10 million men watching
and they're in their bikinis on the internet, "Oh, that's cute. She's just having fun."
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Remember the kid that wanted the Lamborghini, so he stole the car? And
yeah, and then everyone rewarded him.
Exactly.
It was precious.
14-year-old kid stole his family car, went for a joyride, got caught speeding. So his family put everything he owns in the front yard with him and a sign that said, I stole the family car and was speeding. Take my stuff, including his bed and his clothes. And so people took everything he owns.
Oh, my.
What do you think of that?
That's probably a better approach than rewarding the kid. That's a pretty bad thing to do.
All of his toys, all of his video games, all of his clothes, his bed, everything.
I mean, he's not going to be destitute forever. No. Christmas is coming up. Maybe I'm a monster, but I'm okay with this.
I'm way more okay with that than Jamie Foxx taking him for a ride in a Lamborghini.
A celebrity.
Yep. Yeah.
Especially because shortly after that, there was that horrible car accident where the brothers stole a car and took it out, and I believe they passed away. It was two little boys.
Yes.
And it's like, this is why it's not okay for a child to take a car.
Yeah, it's not just that we just have random rules.
Yeah, we're not just like fuddy-duddies like, Grand Theft Auto is bad. No, you're a child, and you don't know how to drive, and this is horrible.
I'm kind of tired of, I love Ryan Reynolds, but I'm so sick of he and his wife just being so cutesy and clapping back and crap. But I'm tired of these apologies. So they got married at a plantation just very few years ago. Just don't do it again. I'm so tired of the public on my knees sobbing. There's nothing we could ever do to make this okay. Well, 3 years ago, you thought it was fine.
Yes.
You didn't raise an eyebrow. So you live and you learn. And now you look at it differently and say, this was a place where people were held captive and beaten and raped. We shouldn't have done that. Okay. Do you feel me at all on this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like Zoe Saldanata going on and crying because she took a role and she's not fully African-American and someone should have. Like just
the funny thing about that is there was outcry about it at the time.
And about Ryan Reynolds?
About Zoe Saldana. And people have been bringing up the Ryan Reynolds, Blake Lively thing for years. That's been a thing. People who have got, you know, it's been a thing in culture of like, hey, stop getting married and stuff at plantations. But now is the time that it's clicking for people, I guess, or becoming more effective. And then you get these public apologies.
I have zero problem with people learning. I have zero problem with people apologizing. But the dramatic calling it, I don't know, it just strikes me the wrong way. Maybe I'm not the audience that they're apologizing to.
Well, do you get the impression that they want praise for acknowledging a bit, the person?
Yeah.
A bit.
And it just, everybody has to do it in order. Here's the thing. You get canceled for something you did in the past. Then you have to go through these machinations before you can. And then they'll still bring it up. So there's no winning. And I think they just throw on extra tears to make it. It's just, there's something false about it.
Took that up a notch.
Take that, Blake Lively.
Take that!
That's straight from Sue.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.